Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I dedicated you. God tells this to Jeremiah, but he could be just as well saying that to us. Every person who has ever been conceived has a plan of God for them. And this includes you. God has a plan for you. What is that plan? Well, there's actually a couple different kinds of plans. There's an individual plan that God has for you, his will for you, and your specific things he wants for you in your life. But there's something everybody is called to, and that is to love, to be with God for all eternity. And that's where we come to the second reading. God calls us to the experience of his infinite love in heaven and here on earth. At every moment of your life, God is trying to communicate with you his eternal, all-powerful love. That's a plan he has for you. The problem with the world today is that we don't know what love is. We've lost sight of what love is. So what is it? We should refer more often to the second reading than we normally do. Paul says, love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not jealous. It is not pompous. It is not inflated. It is not rude. It does not seek its own interests, and it is not quick-tempered. That's very different in the way the world likes to think of things. Because if this is what love is, then the world would say love is weakness. It is a sign that you are weak. After all, isn't that letting somebody trample over your life? Trample over you? No, it's not. That is not what love is, because we haven't read the rest of what love is. What else does Paul say about what love is? It does not brood over injury. It does not, in a certain sense, retreat. See, love is offensive, not defensive. When we are rude, when we are pompous, when we are inflated, when we are unkind, when we are impatient, that's a defensive mechanism. We are on the defense, and so we think we have to be defensive about it. Love goes outside of ourselves. It doesn't brood over these injuries, or it doesn't complain or whine and moan about the things we have to do. Now, the example I like to give, kind of a funny example, but changing diapers. What are we doing when we change diapers? I've never seen a parent brood over changing diapers. Okay, maybe the first time they have to change diapers, you know, making their funny faces and all the stink. But you really don't. You know, what do? We play with the child. We even make funny faces at them while we're changing the diapers. I mean, isn't that crazy? But we don't count the cost. We don't brood over those things. Another example might be this in creation, and in the first fall, in the fall of Adam and Eve. After the fall, now Adam has to toil by the sweat of his brow, right? And now women have to give birth in increased pains. Bible doesn't say now you've got pains. It's an increase of pains. Why? because we choose no longer to love, and we now count the cost. Ouch. We think about the pain we suffer. Adam sweats by his brow now because he's thinking about how he has to work so hard. Before that, he loved his wife and never counted the cost. He just simply loved. It does not rejoice over wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. Now, this is an interesting opposition that Paul is setting up. Wrongdoing as opposed to truth. So he's saying that wrongdoing and truth are diametrically opposed to each other. They are natural enemies of each other. Why? Why is that? Because the wrongdoing is based on lies and comes from the father of lies and prince of darkness. It is opposed to truth. How often do we hear that? Because by the world's standing, there is no truth. Therefore, there is no opposition to them. All in the meantime, they say everybody can do whatever they want. Well, they've just wiped out the fact that it is an objective truth that thou shalt not rape, thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal against you. Those are absolute truths. We now must be obedient to them. The moral truths are what guides us and guides a society to be good and to be an upholding society, a true civilized and intelligent society. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. It might take time. It might not happen nearly as fast as we want it, but it always comes through. This is also the ruggedness of love. How tough love is, because it is tough to have mercy. It is tough to sacrifice yourself for the good of others. That is the old rugged cross. It is hard to do, but it is not a sign of weakness. It is a sign of our true dignity. It is a sign of our eternity, the eternity that we are called to live out with God. That is love. It does not make us rude. We don't attack other people in that defensive mode. When we go back on those defensive mode, we have admitted we are conquered. That's why somebody who is losing an argument or a debate, they do what they call is ad hominem, which means to attack the person. We see this in typical politics. They attack the person instead of talking about the issue at hand. They want to divert the tactic. Most people who have dysfunctional homes understand this tactic all too well. They're doing something they're not supposed to be doing, so what do? Change the subject, attack the person. Typical. It's what we do in our humanity. But let's also look at what Paul here is. It's a sandwich here. He starts off and ends with this little idea. If I speak in human and angelic tongues, but do not have love, I am a resounding gong and a clashing cymbal. He also says, if there are prophecies, they will be brought to nothing. If tongues, they will cease, and on and on. There's something a little bit deeper that he's pointing to in what love is. God is love. God is the source of all love. All the love you have is not your own. It was given to you by God. And we are stewards of the love that we have been given. That's what purgatory is all about, giving God what was owed, the love that he gave us. That's purgatory. That's learning to suffer as he suffered, without hope of expectation in return. That's love. So when we look at our actions that we do, we can do all the wonderful things in the world, but we're a clashing symbol. Clash. Yeah, right? We're just nothing but a clashing symbol. If we can do all the good works, but we do not have love, God is love if we do not have God. If we don't have God, our works cannot be pleasing to him. We need supernatural works. And if we don't do it with God, our works are nearly natural. They got to enter into the supernatural realm. So God supplies what is lacking. God supplies us with the grace that we need. Look at it this way. If I'm doing a human act, which is better? That I do the human act and somebody says thank you and they go on their merry way? Or I do the act because I love God, and therefore grace enters in, and now grace is transferred to that person? Which is better, to do a merely human act, or do an act, invite God with it, and give that person grace at the same time? You see, when we do things because we love God back in return, that is what invites grace into the act. That is a difference between Mother Teresa and Joe Blow down the street doing simply a kind act. It is good, wonderful, but so much more when the grace of God enters in. And so it's not about doing the works, prophesying all these wonderful things. It's about love for God. And in this, it comes back to what we started with. What are we made for? What is God's plan for you? Love. You are to be enveloped entirely in the love of God. Now, God has already loved us. He already died on the cross for us. So what keeps us from that love? Well, for love to be completed, it must be responded to. It must be given. Now, to love God, he's not physically around us. I mean, we got a statue, but that's not him. That's a statue of him. That's a representation of him. So who do we go? How do we love God in return? By loving our brothers and sisters. He gave us this as a means by which we complete that cycle of love. And now we start to enter into this relationship of love with Jesus Christ because we're loving our brothers and sisters, but not just for loving them for their sake, but because Jesus has died on the cross for us, because he loved us first. Now, imagine this. Instead of using our typical defense mechanism of rudeness, of being unkind, imagine if our defense mechanism becomes to love in return. How different the world would be. Imagine if we loved each other despite the suffering, that we didn't have to brood over our injuries, but just exude the joy of God, exude his love as if it never even happened. It doesn't even wound us because we have love. Love conquers all. Love always, without exception, always wins. Because the enemy, the one who is rude, is on retreat. They're on defense mode. And love is on offense mode. It goes. And it goes out. And through the power of God, through his eternal love, it constantly gives. Through the power of God. If we were just doing a human act, we cannot eternally give and eternally love and eternally forgive. It is only through the power of God that something like that is possible. That through on the cross, even when there was no hope for Jesus, when people were mocking him at the very last breath, he still said, "This is my body given up for you." And in the end, he's won. He has won. Has he won our hearts? Has we allowed love to conquer us? To conquer the little parts in our heart that have gone cold, where we have judged other people? Have we allowed the love of God to exude, to bring healing and grace to our souls and out to everybody we meet? Have we allowed it to transform our world?